Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics. I'm Emma Clark. I'm still at the Lords Convention in Bristol, and I'm sitting in my hotel room with Rob Ellis. Rob,
hi there.
Welcome back.
Nice to be here.
Third appearance on the book club from challenging books in the past. Junker, episode 268, the comic that nobody wanted. Lovesick, this time last year, episode 308, which sort of broke me. I give out these, or I make up these whimsical job titles for people on the podcast. So like I have an official art correspondent, I've got a North American correspondent. Richard Chief is my classic British comics correspondent. You I've dubbed as the weird shit correspondent.
I mean, other people know me better than I know myself, clearly.
These job titles come with no extra. It's like when they give you a new title at work, but saying we're not going to pay you anymore.
No.
Anyway. Right. So, third episode. What have you chosen to come back to the book club with?
I've chosen the image title World Tree by James Tynion IV and art by Fernando Blanco.
And colours by Jordi Belair, lettered by Aditya Bidikar, edited by Stephen Fox, designed by Dylan Todd. Quite a bit of graphic design, it seems to me, in the trade that I've got. This collects Image Comics World Tree issues 1-5 from 2023. So,
oh, if you get the trade, they put a little story in which wasn't in the first five comics from Image 30th Anniversary Anthology 8, which is a little kind of prequel to the series.
Right.
There's eight extra pages if you get that first trade. So,
I haven't got that, I don't think.
I don't know, you might have done.
In the digital, because I'm in digital, you're in hard copy.
Yes.
Okay, so the first thing to say is 2023 comic, as ever, you're bang up to date, because nostalgia is...
Yeah, I don't want to bang on about it, and I know a lot of my friends are afflicted by nostalgia, but I think there might be a cure for them, and it could be this comic.
Okay, so why this one? Why World Tree?
I love horror. Mm. It's a bright day in Bristol. We've been out running. I've had a lovely breakfast. And you start thinking, why would you think dark thoughts? Why? And then you realise, I love horror. I love spooky houses and flickering lights, possessed dolls. And you know, I love serial killers. And it's a genre that's been hit very hard by tech, by the, you know, the advances in computing. If you can phone the police or track someone, the tension can be lost in a film. And the cinema especially has dealt with this in a couple of ways. You know, we've had folk horror that everyone bangs on about, you know, the Wicker Man and the modern sort of variants of that. Set your story in the past, set it, but like The Conjuring, set it in the 70s or 80s. And they're both good ways, but they're both nostalgic ways, I think, of treating it. So let's make tech scary and make horror fresh again.
Okay. So technology is very scary in this comic. Give us the outline. What on earth is World Tree about?
Yeah, it's an odd title. Things look bad in Pennsylvania current day. Gibson Lane has done a horrible thing. He's gone on a 60-person killing spree, and he's also done it live on all his socials, so everyone's seen it. He's been taken into police custody and seems to be flickering with strange lights. His brother, Ellison, attempts to visit him in police custody, and that's when things get even stranger. A naked tattooed woman who appears to be able to access to any form of technology, she turns up and she murders all the police in the police station. She thanks the murderer, Gibson, for his service before also killing him. She tells a shocked Ellison, this is the brother, to find her online before disappearing. And the backstory is 25 years ago, tech genius Gabriel Winter and his group of geeky friends discovered the Undernet, a forbidden corner of the internet. But what did they find there, and how does it link to this current murder spree?
Okay, so as you say, some after-breakfast horror.
It feels a little early in the bright lights, doesn't it?
It's dark. All right, let's talk a little bit about the story. James Tynion IV is the writer.
He is.
Quite the hot writer still, isn't he?
I don't think there's a busier man than him. Can we talk about him a little bit?
Sure.
So he was an intern at Vertigo,
right,
under Shelley Bond. And he now bizarrely still works at Vertigo. You know, he's got a kind of another title out called Nice House on the Lake or by the Sea. And that's been put under the Vertigo banner now. So it's kind of like he's come full circle, but he's so busy and he's at so many different companies. And I first heard about him going through previews. I saw a comic in 2020 called The Department of Truth. With art by Martin Simmons,
who
fully painted art, looks lovely, a little bit Dave McKean, Bill Sienkiewicz, and it's X-Files meets conspiracy theories. And the visuals are dense and the writing's dense. And the intensity with which that comic's done grabbed me. And I locked onto this name, Tinian. And I realized that I'd sort of just avoided him by, I'd been reading Tom King's Batman, and I think he jumped on afterwards. And he sort of got this ability to be quite marketable. He created a character called Punchline, which was kind of the next Harley Quinn, a Joker girlfriend. And I saw on eBay that prices went crazy for whatever issue she first appeared. And this is a cycling comics that we see all the time. And I picked up a series of his called Joker with Gillian March art, but it felt too mainstream. It was good. It was just another solid comic. And then I go to a local comic shop every week in Reading called Crunch Comics. And some of the guys there recommended an earlier Tinian book, a much earlier one called The Mimetic Trilogy, which reprints Boom stories, I think from probably 10 years back. And there's a trilogy of apocalyptic tales, a bit like Black Mirror, but with an unlimited budget. The art's indie, but that's not to say it's bad. It's just not going to look like Jim Lee, if that's what you're after. And the writing's genius. You know, they're like future shocks that just keep going. You know, you turn the page and another thing's happened. The writing is ambitious. A little bit like Apple's TV series Pluribus.
Oh, yes.
That sort of apocalypse where maybe not everyone's killed, but everyone's affected by something. And you might not get the result that you expect from the setup. The other stuff he's done that I've really liked is The Deviant for 2024.
Yes.
Which, he's a gay dude, you know, Tinian the Fourth. And this is a tale of, I think, a gay guy who's, there's a Santa Claus killer who's been put away. And then the murders start to repeat themselves. And he goes to visit, in a kind of a Hannibal Lecter update, he goes to visit the guy who was arrested, the serial killer, to talk to him. There's kind of that tension in the air, maybe from a different angle. And it's only 9 issues, set in Milwaukee, early 70s. And it's kind of intimate and scary, which I think is probably part of Tinian's special powers to make us like the characters. Apart from that, this is how busy he is. I mean, this is only the last few years. There's a thing called The Blue Book by Dark Horse, which is kind of Michael Oeming art, a painstaking retelling of sort of alien abduction stories from, I guess, 50s and 60s. The one that I would recommend to everyone, if you're thinking, I can't pick up this series, there's 19 issues, Rob, I'm not going to read all those, go and pick up Spectrograph, which is a fully painted, a distillery hardcover from 2024 with art by Christian Ward. And that's a haunted house story with fully painted artwork, and lovely. He's good at updating older stories, and he's done Invisible Man, which is a Universal horror classic through Image, with Danny, who's 2000 AD sort of
Danny Strips.
Yeah. Danny Strips, yeah. If she's still Danny Strips now, she's Danny Batwoman.
Mm.
But that's chilling old school horror, the Invisible Man. And I've had to stop looking into his stuff because. Something is killing the children. I read the first trailer.
Yes.
It's perfectly good stuff. I could just go and buy all those as well. He's the only guy where I think I've actually put the brakes on, go, stop it. At one point, my pull list was 2/3 Tinian. And you're sort of there going, you've got to hear other voices. But this man's been so prolific. And I don't think I've read anything that I thought he'd just hacked out. You know, I think he's put thought into everything. I think it's at his zenith probably now, because he's now overseeing a title called Exquisite Corpses. So he, a bit like a kind of Netflix, a series writer, he's overseen it. So he's probably done the first few issues and the overseeing it all. And in Exquisite Corpses, 12 killers battle it out in a small American town to decide which crime family gets to run America for the next 5 years. So it's high concept, violent and funny, dare I say it, mainstream.
Right.
But it's he gets different artists to do each one. I think Jordi Belair is colouring them all, so they've got a unified look. And there's a feeling this is it's a card game as well. There's a feeling this could go into a TV series or a film, establishing a new franchise. He seems ambitious. I think that's what I'm getting at. He's not just keen to stick to comics. His comics say Image, but or whatever it is. But there's also Tiny Onion, which seems to be his own imprint, his own sort of company. Tinian, Tiny Onion. It kind of makes sense in a wordplay thing. I touched on Nice House on the Lake with, I'm going to murder this name, Alvano Martinez Bueno, which is kind of Big Brother, a Big Brother scenario with the same colorist as World Tree, where the kind of the guys wake up in a house, a beautiful house, there's 10 of them, and they can't quite remember how they got there. And then they kind of slowly find out the rest of humanity is gone.
Yes.
And maybe there's a twist to whether they're entirely alive or not. Are they in heaven or hell, or is it something entirely different? And I think that's, if you like the kind of more Watchmen, I want 12 issues and then I'm done, or a sequel's fine. Go and read Nice House on the Lake, you know, especially if you like sci-fi. And these stories sort of convince me that 2000 AD has moments of brilliance in things like Brink, but it's not delivering these stories for me anymore.
I read The Deviant.
Yes.
That was the one, of course, there was quite a delay for the last issue, wasn't there? And I had to go back and reread the previous 8 issues to sort of catch up and remind myself, because there's a reveal which was a bit, won't spoil it, but the reveal came and I was a bit like, who's that?
Is this all you've got?
Yes.
I don't remember that character.
Yeah.
But I think the writing's good, because it's set at Christmas, isn't it?
Yes.
And I can't remember when the first issue came out, but, you know, I read the issues as they come out. So sometimes you're sat there in the sun outside thinking, this feels odd. Firstly, it's a horror comic, but I think it still works. And I still think the characters in it, I don't think I've ever read it all together.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to get at. But I think I care about his characters. He does that Stephen King thing of baking them in pretty well, so you like them before maybe the more horrible things happen to them. And I think, you know, there's a lot of Stephen King's It in World Tree, the group of heroes, two time periods, and we gather them back together to face the evil again.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. They're an older group and something bad happened in the past and they sort of fixed it, but maybe they haven't. Is that right? Something like that. And they have to do it again.
I think so, but how does it work? Do they do all the young stuff and then all the old stuff, or do we jump between? Because this is more ambitious, isn't it? They jump between the two.
Jump in times, yes. Because there's also, without giving too much away, there's a flash forward as well, isn't there?
You've just ruined the book for people.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I think the ambition's there. And I love seeing, if you jump between two different time frames, this suffers from having quite a lot of characters, I think. And they try and give them a big introduction with a name at the start, but there's certainly a couple of characters where I assumed they were just going to get bumped off pretty quick because we didn't get a good introduction to them. And actually the death rate's pretty low, and I enjoy their bitching. I enjoy their rekindling old romances and friendships. And the other thing I like about the book is it's got that kind of slight paranoia and a timeliness that maybe Grant Morrison's Invisibles had the turn of the century. That kind of, what side are you on? Because there's different factors in this that maybe see the invading technology as either inevitable or something to be embraced. You know, it's kind of got the AI thing, you know, where you chat to people and they go, well, it's going to happen anyway. Let's get on board with AI. And other people are going, well, it's going to lead to the downfall of civilization. You know, so it's got both those things on a crazy scale, I think. That, and the villains certainly seem to think they're on the side of the good in it.
You know, downstairs in Lawless, quite a lot of discussion about AI and sort of overhearing, you know, people saying about its effects on art and comic book art in particular.
Mm.
And as you say, this is quite a timely book, World Tree, because it talks about the dangers of the internet in a way.
Yeah.
You know, this thing that was going to transform us all, where we'd have all the world's knowledge at our disposal and we use it for horrible purposes a lot of the time. And in World Tree, it comes back to haunt them, doesn't it?
It does indeed. But I'm trying to think of other things. Why do I like this story so much? Why didn't I choose one of the other things? And it gives me something I liked in the 80s, maybe. That sort of a hint of the video nasty.
Right.
The fear, the invading, you know, it's hard to imagine, but there was such a fear that videotapes, that was the whole, you know, the scary thing then, that you could watch any awful films, you know, in your own home again and again. And one particular one feels like a pre-runner to World Tree, and that's Cronenberg's film, Videodrome.
Oh, right. Yes, of course. Yeah.
Where it's quite hard to explain, but it's there's a guy called Max Wren, played by James Woods,
mm-hmm.
and he's a sleazy cable channel owner, and he's keen to look for anything that will just get people to watch his dirty channel. And he starts finding a recordings of an S&M sort of channel. This tech guy finds a satellite and starts recording these things. And he's watching it, but there's a hidden video signal in the broadcast. So it's got the fear of technology. And this video signal leads to hallucinations and even bodily mutations. You know, it's remembered for... Well, he's given these sort of visions, and he has to accept he's become part of the new flesh, and he's pushing videotapes that are kind of pulsating and veiny inside this sort of cavity in his chest.
He has like a video door opens up, doesn't he? He puts the video in. Yeah.
It's kind of one of those films where when you watch it, you go, that's kind of a mess. What was that all about? Which might be how you feel about World Tree if you read it. But it does leave you feeling, thinking about the film. You know, the odds and ends, but some of the visuals are amazing, which I'd say they are in this comic. Obviously, Videodrome's got Debbie Harry in it, which for a man of a certain age is
a plus.
It's wonderful.
But yeah.
It's funny that we have these fears, don't we? And, you know, I'm sure you could talk about the fears, the Penny Dreadfuls, the worries that somehow Penny Dreadfuls were going to distort humanity. And now it was the internet, wasn't it, for a while?
Yes.
And now it's social media it's moved on to. And a little bit AI, hasn't it?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about this because, you know, World Tree's got the idea of a sort of cursed bit of internet that if you see it, you immediately become a homicidal psycho killer.
I love it because in the comic, people's eyes kind of light up and there's kind of this video breakup effect, video
damage. Video glitching of them, yes.
That's exactly it. So you get kind of weird colours and things are, you know, inverted and stuff. And this is just people staring into phones. So they use it as a weapon. So if the nasty, have we called her name yet? She's called Fear.
It's spelt in leet speak, as they used to say, isn't it?
Is that what they say? So it's like a password.
It's like a gamer sort of thing. That's what I saw it as.
Oh, because I was assuming it's like, well, you know, when you want your password to be fish, but you make the I a one. I thought it was kind of a play on that, but I didn't.
And you use PH instead of F, and World Tree has got a zero and a couple of threes in it, doesn't it?
As the name for a series, the name World Tree, I don't think helps me at all. I'd rather it was called either Fear or the Undernet. I don't understand. World Tree in the comic is a message board that is used between the heroes or the people we're following to save information or to share information about the evil internet called the Undernet. And in a weird way, every time I read the comic, I sort of forget what the main idea is, which is there's an evil bit of the internet, but we don't know where it came from, do we? Is it? It's explained, I think, in probably five different ways that they found a cursed bit of the internet. Or it was always a secret thing there, or it's someone else's internet, or it's an alien internet, or it's the opposite of the internet. And by the end, in a strange way, I don't know if I care.
Right.
Because there's a naked murder woman walking around killing people.
Killing people.
And that distracts me from the fact that I'm not really sure.
The tattooed naked murder lady. Yeah.
Yes. And I like the fact they even sort of have little jokes. Well, let's talk about the art, because the comic has, as all comics do now, a multiple of variant covers. But they haven't gone the cheesecake route, I don't think, largely, with Fear.
It's, yes, I mean, on the cover of the trade that I've got, it's her sitting on the bed looking at a green screen. And it's, I suppose, no, it isn't cheesecakey at all, is it?
Because she hangs about in the back of panels, because she knows... For some reason, she knows our heroes, or she's watched them or something. She doesn't seem to be running to kill them straight away. And in fact, there's one bit where someone sort of says, let her go, we'll need her in the future, which kind of is like, oh, God. You know, it felt like a little bit, let's keep the plate spinning for a few more issues. It seemed obvious to try and either stop her or, I don't know, hold her somehow. But Fernando Blanco draws her like she's a mannequin. Is that fair? Like she's
She's
beautiful. Yes. She's beautiful. She's proportioned, but she's barely human.
Yeah.
Is that fair? She's a little bit.
She's very weird and otherworldly in a way, isn't she? Yes. Mannequin is good.
And a little bit Terminator.
Hmm.
And a hint of Hellraiser. You know, a hint of you wouldn't like. They do that clever thing, sort of the Darth Vader thing. Of the first time you see her, she's just murdering people, taking no joy in it either, just kind of doing it. And I think at one point she closes a victim's eyes with her fingers, a very strange moment quite early on. And so she believes what she's doing is a kindness. I think that's the horrible thing about her. A little bit like Domino in Lovesick, if anyone would care.
Yes, I remember.
Let's go and read that. But it's got that horrible thing. But it's also got other elements of espionage and spycraft. They're sneaking around buildings, which this artist does well. He does lighting and this kind of, the sneaking around thing. I mean, sneaking around shouldn't be hard in a comic, but sometimes it feels like wasted panels if no one's talking. But it's
Spanish artist, Fernando Blanco.
Yes.
Marvel Zombies, Thunderbolts, Batman and Catwoman, none of those that I've read.
I thought he was a new boy. I thought he was a young gun.
Yeah.
And there's that awful moment where you realise you've got the internet and you look him up. And then I could see I'd bound, because I'm not a bookbinder. I design books that get bound. So I take the single issues that I buy. If they're any good, I'd bind them into volumes so I can reread them later and boast about them and get drawings in them. And I realized I'd bound a load of his comics called Fallen Angel with Peter David.
All right.
It was kind of a DC book. 2003. To my mind, it feels like a Vertigo book. There's like a spooky little village and a sort of a strange protector, a beautiful woman who's a protector of this village, and different factors fighting for control of it. And it transferred to IDW after 20 issues, bizarrely. But he'd inked all of these. So I had his name on the spines. And it's kind of, you know, the artwork's a bit similar to this. It's realistic. It's spooky. There's not a lot of cross-hatching. It's really good. You know, he didn't pencil it. But I assumed he was a new guy. Then I think I met him briefly at Thought Bubble.
Oh, right.
And then realised I think he's a veteran, isn't he? He must be late 40s, early 50s, I think. And he worked digitally. This is what slightly saddened me.
Because
I wanted to buy a page of art or something. And he does that thing of selling one-to-one proofs of his work that are stamped and with a certificate that says, this is the only print of this work. But it's one of those weird things where I still sort of go, is it real though? Is it really the work? So I'd love to get a sketch off him someday.
The colours are also quite important. Jordi Belair, lots of green from internet stuff, but also those weird video glitches, which are impressive when they happen.
What I like is we see the internet is a world you go into. If you stare at a computer screen that's infected or a phone, you go into that world. Mm. You know, and you're lost in it. And I think a lot of people would have just, a lot of series might have chickened out and just had people kind of zombified staring at screens. We go into the internet, and I think the colouring, the distortion, it is a hellscape, isn't it, of kind of broken creatures and skull-like images and people at the wrong sort of sizes. And I'm not sure whether that's a glimpse of the future or a glimpse of hell, but I love those. And that's it's sort of something I've only really seen in things like Event Horizon. Do you remember that sort
of? Oh, yeah. Do you see?
It's kind of Event Horizon is a slightly crap horror film starring the Jurassic Park guy, Sam Neill, from 1997.
Mm.
And it's really fondly remembered. And this is what I find about nostalgia is people go, Event Horizon's back out and it's 4K and you can see it in cinema. And you want to go, but it's shit. It's shit with flashes of brilliance. And this comic takes those little flashes. In the film, a spaceship goes further than spaceships ever gone before, through a black hole, out of a white hole, something like this. And the design of the spaceship inside is wonderful. You know, it's absolutely jaw-dropping. Do watch the film if you can. But the story falls apart and it gets less and less interesting. But there's a bit where they kind of find recordings of what's happened to the crew. You know, it's like Mary Celeste in space.
Yeah.
What's happened to the crew? And it's little kind of little video blipverts of people ripping their eyes out or shouting, he's here, or orgies in blood. I don't really know.
Killing each other.
Everyone always goes, there'll be a director's cut one day. You go, if they did, it would be dreadful. You just look at these bits and go, it's just rubber people with fake blood on. A little snippet of something is great. A little flavouring can be great. And I think Welltree does it pretty well in giving you this horrible world, but it's glitched enough and broken up enough that I sort of, it doesn't have the Buffy problem of where is this other dimension that the horrors come from? And once you get there, it looks a bit like the Wild West with a filter on it. And you're going, is this all you got, mate?
The cursed medium, the cursed video, the cursed internet.
Mm.
We've just done Brink Book 4, which has got the Mercury video that if you see it, drives you mad. And if you look at this bit of the internet that fear provides, it drives you into homicidal rage.
Brink's more than that, though, isn't it? Because Brink is humanity's left Earth. So Brink's a 2000 AD story. It's probably on volume 6 now, book 6.
Book 7 is book running 7, in at the moment, Jesus. In the prog, yeah.
I certainly really enjoyed the energy of the first 3 or 4 books, and it finds a different gear that I maybe later on I'll go, Rob, you were wrong. You should go back and read those. Colbard draws it.
Yep.
Who writes
it? Dan Abnett.
Dan Abnett, the 2000s greatest writer at the moment.
Most prolific.
But I think we've lost Earth and suddenly we're staring into the abyss of our own futility. We're staring into space and suddenly we need places built for us, habitats. And we started to imagine new gods. Do we need new gods? Now we've got we're so frail staring into the infinite that we suddenly realize we're going to go mad. And I think that's where we are with AI, isn't it? And that's where we are with computing now. If a computer can draw better than us, solve equations, then what is the point of human endeavor? And you could, and I think maybe the internet's the same now, isn't it? You know, we don't. What's the point of a pub quiz if you can look up all the answers in the toilet, you know?
Well, you can do it on you can speak to your Apple Watch and it will give you the answer. This was recently in the news.
And I think the undernet sounds silly, but it's a way to think about the internet. And what is the internet? It's practically it's a network of computers, right? I think.
Yeah.
Servers? I don't know what servers are. Big computers somewhere else.
Made out of string, yes.
But it's not the internet is where we go to for everything, isn't it? It's where we go to stalk our exes, book our holidays. There must be nice things. Shop. We must shop for Brink Book 7. I don't really understand the effect of the internet. And I'm going to throw social media in there. What is the, I keep hearing about doom scrolling. And the fact we've got a word doom scrolling implies that somehow this is a negative thing. And we're back to the moral panics, aren't we? This sort of worry.
Well, I wondered about this because I'm interested in cursed.
Oh, yes, I've lost the curse thing, but the cursed thing's good. Yes,
but is it because if we go back, cursed books, cursed bits of paper.
Yes.
Obviously into VHS's, games, the phone call in Ring, which leads to the video. And I just wonder if it's all linked to those moral panics that we develop about new technologies. The written word, the recorded word, the game, the video, the CD, the internet.
Because the curse, there's a structure to the curse, isn't there? Why is the curse there?
Yes.
Because the body wasn't buried on hallowed ground. What's the solution? We dig up the body, like Freddy Krueger's time. We dig up Freddy's body or the nun that gave birth to him and we move her body into hallowed ground. The curse is broken. Freddy's defeated. And it gives a structure, doesn't it?
Mm.
But I think you're asking a deeper question is why do we need the... Why do we so enjoy the curses? Is that it?
Yeah, I think so. I think why do we as a society or, different societies around the world enjoy or entertain the idea of these curses? There's also something... I can't quite formulate this. There's something about the idea that we may be controlled by something else.
Oh, if we are, then we're free, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's not my fault I'm a terrible human being.
It's because I watched Charles play 3, or it's because I played Mortal Kombat with the full fatality mode or whatever, or it's because I saw something on the internet, the cursed video. And I just wonder if it's society's fears about losing control or desires to lose control. But it always happens. Whenever we get new technology, we get a curse associated with it, or we get a moral panic about it.
What I like is when we get the new moral panic, the old one seems quite comforting, doesn't it?
Yes.
So now when I watch Videodrome, I think, oh, those were the days, sticking a cursed videotape inside your chest. Oh, if only life was that simple again. And it's quite nice that way, isn't it? I don't know. There must be a word for sort of enjoying an old panic.
Well, if we think about the videos that made the Video Nasties list, most of those films are now readily available.
And they're dreadful.
They're mostly dreadful.
I mean, yeah, with a few, I know I'll argue this with other people, but, you know, The Evil Dead stands out because it's good fun. It's, you know, it's imaginative, but Driller Killer isn't, it's no one's favourite, is it?
Yeah.
I don't believe it corrupted anyone.
And we all get, or at least I get, sort of, again, whimsical joy about the idea that the Dolly Parton film, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, made it onto the list just because of the title. And, you know, it's a Dolly Parton movie in which she sings, you know.
I think what those things had was, and we may be getting off subject now, is often the idea of them, sometimes the cover, was so much better than what the film delivered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, again, that, you know, we shouldn't talk about nostalgia with Rob, but...
No,
Video shop covers.
Yes, and I do. I bought a videotape recently, which I'm saying I needed to scan in, but it was called Class of Newcomb High.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never watched the film. I think I watched the trailer, but I love the cover. But I love the film that cover tells me is going to be in the box. And I don't think that film is in the box.
It's not in the box now.
No, and I think this is in the box. I think World Tree, so far, has delivered. Now, I know that some people have said it's so slow, and one criticism online said, Tinian is an edgelord, which is, I guess, someone that winds people up online. He just shows you something really horrible, then gives you a soap opera. And I was thinking, well, soap opera means you care about the characters. I suppose you could argue it means something ongoing that never gets resolved. But you know, that's all I want, is something really horrible that happens to people I really like. That's a story, isn't it?
Well, you mentioned Stephen King because he does give us groups of characters that we get quite invested in.
Mm.
We quite like them or interested in them. And then, as you say, weird shit happens to them.
Yeah.
Okay. You work in graphic design and...
Video special effects.
Video special effects.
Yes.
Just mention that the graphic design on my trade, digitally, is pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, that Dylan Todd, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes, Dylan Todd.
All the credits are done like sort of the message boards on the internet from, I guess, 2000, 1999, whatever it is. I think they just do a wonderful, beautiful job on these comics. They shove the ads at the back. If you do get issue, sorry, if you have got the original comics or your board, I bought issue 2. And I think it's issue 2. And bizarrely, there's a little scene. I'm embarrassed to say this. There's a little scene that there's two characters, I think, out in the snow, and they get attacked by giant plant creatures. And they're never referred to again. I reread all these sort of, I think there's 18 or 19 issues out. I reread them all for today. And I looked online and someone else said, what happened to those two characters at the end of issue 2? And I generally thought that Tinian had made a mistake. But in fact, it's a little bit out of a different comic that has the same creative team.
Oh, okay.
A thing called Razor Blades.
Oh, it's a teaser, is it?
It's a teaser.
Oh, you have to, right.
Because there's just one page advert, then it says, here's our 6-page preview. And I honestly read it thinking, well, the artwork's the same. The colouring's on a little bit neon, but here we are. And it was one of those bizarre feelings in a comic that I was actually going mad, that there were characters never referred to again. And I was thinking, he's playing a really long game with this, but it's Razor Blades. But clearly other people online were confused, but went along with it thinking, Tinian's a genius.
Mm.
He's got a plan here for it.
So it's I've got 5 issues in digital on my iPad in front of me. You've got a floppy there, but you've also, of course, you've bound it.
Yes, the first 16 this is.
That's the
little teaser bit from the anthology. So there's a real hardcover coming out.
Right.
New cover of these first 16, which makes me think they'll probably try and go for at least 30 issues. Does that make sense? There's some kind of plan there.
Yeah, well, we should say World Tree is ongoing. There's 3 collections. A 4th one's due in August, but there's also an omnibus, which is the hardcover, I think, in October. I got it for about... Well, actually, I think it was less than a tenner.
Yeah, they're cheap, aren't they? The first trades from Image
are
usually cheap for the ongoings.
Yeah.
And I think they only do 6 issues a year, maths-wise. Does that make sense? I think the art's always the same, Fernando Blanco, so I don't think it's going to be cranked out any quicker. So I think they take breaks and stuff because there's only been 18 issues in 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think And I like that. I'll wait for it. You know, when you said there was a delay on Deviant, I don't care. Just, I don't, I'll wait.
I mean, my only problem with the delay was that I'd forgotten everything that had happened up to that point, and I had
I've forgotten it the next day anyway. Yeah, I don't, I don't really mind that.
Okay, so it's available. There's at least, you've read on. I haven't read past the first five. There's more weird stuff in the future, I guess, for these characters and this.
Yeah, it's ambitious. It definitely tries to make you enjoy. I think you've given away at least three different time periods.
Right.
I believe there's a plan. People online have been more dubious of that, but I believe there is. I trust in Tinian.
Right. Favourite Tinian work so far? Before you answer that, I should say that I haven't read any of his superhero stuff at all.
Yeah, he's done a lot of it. A lot of
Has he?
Batman World, yeah.
But I have read the first volumes of Something is Killing the Children, The Department of Truth, The Woods, The Nice House on the Lake. I read all of The Deviant because that was...
Done in one.
Done in one.
Do you know what? The nicest surprise, a friend of mine, Luke, said, do you want to read Dracula? And I was like, no, I don't want to read Dracula. I've seen so many adaptations of Dracula. I have no interest in it. And he goes, oh, it's Martin Simmons and Tinian. And he lent me the hardcover. You know, you turn the pages thinking, oh, for God's sake, I can't read Dracula. It was pretty wonderful. There were double-page spreads in there that literally made me gasp.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I needed more Dracula in my life. But I did. So that was the biggest surprise. It's not like I don't particularly love those old characters. The best thing he's done, I think, is probably that Spectrograph. I think that's the one I'd recommend.
Oh, I don't know that one at all. I'll have to look for that.
Yeah, not, you know, an update of a haunted house thing with a nice twist. But I think the artwork's really haunting. You know, I think he's the perfect artist.
Right.
I think he writes... I went to Portsmouth Comic Con last weekend. This is May, where every weekend seems to have a Comic Con.
Right.
After the drought for the previous months. And Alison Sampson was there, Department of Truth artist, amongst other things. And we got chatting about Department of Truth, and there's a jam issue where different artists do different pages. I don't know whether it's an anniversary or... And I said to her, did you just get the script for the pages you're doing? And she said, no, I got the script for the whole thing. And the interesting thing is he writes differently for each artist.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you know, Simmons got, you know, a list of every panel, every person that had to be in it, and, you know, what they were wearing, probably what they were smoking. And other people just got that, do that thing we talked about, two pages. And I think he really writes well for the artists. I think he really finds their strengths and writes to those strengths.
Okay, so James Tinian IV, Fernando Blanco artwork, which we'll come back to in just a second, weird stuff about cursed media or cursed technologies and our society's history of panicky responses to them.
Oh yes.
I mean, I love a story about a cursed book.
Yes.
A cursed film. A curse.
Do you find cursed objects unreal? Do you believe in curses?
Oh no. No.
No, but I don't believe in ghosts, but at 3 a.m. I do.
All right, okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Would you, so if I'm gonna curse you now, you're gonna be dead within the month.
I made this joke already at this convention, is that my wife likes to buy antique mirrors and strange paintings.
Yes.
And when she brings them home from the auction house or the antique space, I always say, oh, that's a haunted mirror. That painting is haunted.
What does she, how does she react? Is she...
No, she quite likes the idea that we're bringing in haunted mirrors and haunting paintings. Yeah.
She's going to one day just step into the mirror.
Well, that's right.
Never be seen again.
Now, you said it's digital artwork.
Yeah.
Grail pages. Well, I was going to say, if Fernando Blanco could do you a limited edition, the only one of what?
I feel bad because it's a page that's, I think it's on eBay, and it's where she walks. So it's the first issue, I think, where she walks into the police station.
Right.
I think she's covered up, actually, which is an odd thing. But I guess she's motorcycling, you know, for safety's sake. And I think where she goes into the police station, and you can see screens getting disrupted, people looking confused. I think it's iconic. I think he's created a horror icon. Yes.
Right.
You know, I think she could be, she probably won't be, but she could be up there with your Freddy Kruegers and stuff. I don't know if, there's always the cosplay test, isn't there? Or the Halloween test, I've heard.
She's a tricky cosplayer, isn't she?
Well, I don't. You could wear a. I mean, I.
It's going to be a bodysuit.
Body.
Yeah.
There'd be a bodysuit. I'd probably go for the overalls kind of look.
Somebody very. Yeah, the overalls. She wears the overalls, which she takes off. But yeah, somebody could. It was very confident. Could wear a bodysuit.
I'd like to know if Tinian's met his fear yet. If she's, if she's turned up yet, that would be interesting. But that's the page I'd like.
Right. Well,
I don't want him, I don't want a digital copy. I want him to hand draw it.
Not to
and
draw
then
it.
Paint all the glitches by hand.
Get Geordie Belair to colour it physically.
Yeah, physically. Yes, I want that. That'd be my watercolours.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'll see what I can do.
Cheers, mate. Because the last two have been a bit of a disappointment. My page of Junker hasn't come.
No.
And no Lovesick. That's not. Luana Vecchia hasn't sent that either. But we live in hope.
There is a Junker page on auction.
No, I bid for it, but I was a little bit cheap.
Oh, okay.
It went about an hour ago.
Did it?
Yeah.
All right. Yes, because there's various auction houses happening. Auctions are happening while we're sitting here. I lost out on a page earlier today. Yeah.
What did you lose? What was it?
A Ron Turner page. I was a bit... It went for ridiculous money. But anyway, there we go. Okay, so that's your Grail page. We're going to post an image of that when this episode comes out.
Thank you.
In a couple of weeks' time. World Tree, as we say, it's spelt with a zero and then two E's at the end.
Two threes at the end.
Two threes at the end, sorry. Yeah,
yes.
Two threes at the end.
Yes.
It is available from Image and it's easy to find.
I think so.
Yeah. Whether I'll read on, I don't know. I might look at your spectrograph or his spectrograph.
Yeah, maybe you just want a short blast.
Right.
That's all. Maybe, yeah, that's fine.
Great. Okay.
That's good.
So we're at Lawless. We're in Bristol.
We are.
We've been downstairs on the floor. We've been in a panel together, listening to various women creators talking about their work. Any highlights for you from Lawless?
Yes. Eamon sent me a challenge to go and see the Liam Sharp artwork exhibition. And I went to go and see it. I was quite early. I think you said it had been, you know, the door was open quite late. So I walked in and... there was a friendly guy there sort of manning the exhibition. So I waved at him because I know that's what you do when you walk in. And I'm walking around thinking, Liam Sharp, do I know his stuff? You know, and I do because there's early 2000 AD stuff where he kind of looked, that's one way, Bisley-esque, you know, sort of crazy big guns and, I don't know, muscly people, and you know, bodybuilders. And I remember that sort of PJ Maybe story he did with it. Was there a bouncing ball or something? Horror bouncing ball? And his stuff did stand out, but he's quite a restless artist. Some stuff's very detailed. Some stuff seems sketchy. Is that fair? You know, when he did his Wonder Woman Rebirth stuff, it was like he drew every drop of water, every bit of ivy in Themyscira, whatever his name is. He the detail was just bizarre. And I don't love detail, you know, but the drawing's good as well, I think, with him. And then I walked around it all. And a guy in front of me said, are you drawing? And then I realised that was Liam on the way in. I give him the friendly wave of thank you for looking after this exhibition. But he looks like a nice, healthy guy. He doesn't look like the stereotypical 2000D artist, does he, that's never seen sunlight. He looks like a guy that should be running a gym, doesn't he, in his prime.
Yeah.
And he said to this guy, I said I wasn't doing sketching, but I am. And the guy said, how much? And Liam said a price. I'm not going to say that now because I don't like giving away sketch prices because you'll demand that when you meet him. And the guy said, that's good. I might see you later. So then I just walked up to David and said, can you do me a drawing? So the guy laid all the groundwork for me. It was really kind.
Oh, okay.
And then he said to me, who do you want? I said, Wonder Woman. And then he just did a lovely drawing of Wonder Woman. And then he said, she always takes so long. And I said, why? Thinking he was going to say the hair or something. He said, because she has to be perfect. And it was a lovely little moment of meeting your idols, and it's all wonderful. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, that does make sense. That's what's nice about Lawless, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. So, because I asked you to pick a Grail page from Liam Sharp, so your Grail page
it's going to be... Because I wanted it to be Wonder Woman.
Right.
But the one that actually affects me the most, there's one, it's Dredd, Judge Dredd and Death, two big heads. Underneath it is Judge Anderson. And I remember seeing this image and assuming there was a film or a cartoon or something coming out because this looked like a video cover to me. It looked like the video. It looked like the sequel to the movie you want to see. You know, it looked like, and I think it must have been a promo piece, was it, for something?
Right.
But it looks so good. It looks so exciting. Yeah, just put the logo on there and put a 15 certificate, and then I want to watch that. You know, that's a great. So it's probably not his. I doubt he is his favorite piece. But I like the line work or the airbrushed. It looks a bit 80s airbrushed. Very exciting. You got me excited about those characters again.
Oh, okay. I will take a picture of it and try and post it.
Thank you.
To see. Okay. Yeah, so Lawless. Perfect.
Oh, who else? Is, you know, I look at the names now because sometimes the names change, sometimes they don't. And a newbie this year was Silvia Califano.
Oh, yeah.
An Italian artist. And I went through the list and I thought, well, I'd know you. I've got a drawing off you. Oh, I don't know Silvia Califano. And I looked her up on Amazon and there's Elvira.
Oh, right, yes.
In Horrorland.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, I've never read. I get Elvira confused with Vampira. Is it Vampira? Elvira? Yeah. Vampirella?
Vampirella.
And I
there was a Vampira as well, wasn't there? Yes, that's right.
Yeah, the Ed Wood character.
Yes.
It? So I was thinking, this, I'll buy it. I'll buy it and get a signature, but this will be dreadful. This will be going back on eBay. Sign it, pop it on eBay, maybe get most of my money back. And it was Elvira in Horrorland. And it was wonderful. It was Elvira skipping. I think it was 5 issues. Elvira skipping between, she's locked in some videotape or something. But she goes to Psycho. She goes to the Psycho Mansion. She goes to The Shining. She appears in the Alien movie, the first one. She turns up in David Cronenberg's Fly movie.
There's
There's a bit of Videodrome. And it's done with such love and affection. You know, it's wonderful. And then I read it and I was surprised how good it was. You know, and I think this is going to sound bad, but most artists, I think, in Comic Land are really good. I think most writers aren't. They're okay. They're passable. And a lot of sort of franchise-y kind of stuff is pretty poor, I think. You know, it's just servicing the franchise. And this wasn't. This was really good fun. I can't remember the writer's name. Maybe we can stick it on later or something. But I messaged him and just said, you know, great, great book, and sort of listed. I don't think she's on Blue Sky, which is the social media I use. But he got straight back and said, really good fun working on this. I never met the artist, but we had a great time, you know, really pleased when it came out. And I gave her the book, you know, she's Italian, so there's a little bit of, you know, sort of, problems with language. But, and then she said, I haven't had my copy yet. Which is always you know, that always awful moment where they go, ah, the world of comics is cruel. And they genuinely look excited to be looking at their own work, you know, sort of bound together in a nice thing. But that's the good thing about Comic Cons is that you're forced maybe a little bit out of your comfort zone. And what I thought would be a bit of cheesecake was actually damn wonderful.
Great. That sounds good. I might look at that as well. You're giving me stuff that I need to buy. I'll put a link to that book in the show notes on the website for this episode as well.
Thank you.
And just to say, this morning we did... two things. This morning we did the hot dog run. You did your third, I think, is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
5K run round Bristol Harbour.
Yeah, Saturday morning. 7 o'clock.
It sounds awful, doesn't it? It sounds like a terrifyingly awful thing. But once you start running, it's fine.
21 of us did it this morning, or 21 of you did it this morning, including 7 walkers, I think. So, yeah.
It's good. It's nice to come to a Comic Con and feel healthy, isn't it?
Do some exercise.
Stops you drinking too much the night before as well.
Yeah. And also, just quickly, that you're a member of the Comic Art Luncheon Club that we do a couple of times a year with John Hymas. We had one last week where you set us a quiz, a Zenith quiz, which was quite fun.
Yeah, I'd a few years back, about 10 years back, I think, I'd got obsessed with Zenith. I think it was out of print. And I made a double, I was binding the volumes together of Zenith. I'd printed them all out. And I'd made these little Polaroids. So I think there was about 6 Polaroids to a page. And double pages, so 12 of these little gaps, little squares. And I got artists to fill them in, and mainly 2000 AD guys. And it was such an odd thing to ask artists to do. Some of them loved it. Henry Flint absolutely loved it. You know, he wanted to draw Zenith next to Zombo, you know, his creation or whatever. Other guys really didn't get into it. You know, it was too small, these little boxes, or they didn't enjoy it. But I photocopied it, scrubbed the names off, and made this into a quiz for the guys. They had to guess. I gave them the names, but they had to guess which artist had done which drawing. And I thought, you sort of think, oh, it'd be easy. You can spot, I don't know, Steve Dillon or something.
Yeah.
But other ones got, you know, harder. And Colin McNeil was the interesting one, because these guys absolutely adore Colin McNeil, who's, he's America, isn't he? A mechanism.
Yeah.
He's a Judge Dredd legend. But they couldn't recognise his pencil work on, or his line work on Zenith.
Mm.
But he did an excellent job. Oh, Disraeli, who's here today, he was in there. And he'd drawn Zenith, who'd crashed into a tree.
He was in a tree, yes, I remember that.
Absolutely wonderful. But yeah, I like the lunches. It's a nice time to share. I you know, I don't like the nostalgia, but I like meeting the guys.
It is great fun. As is the hot dog run, as is Lawless here in Bristol. Right, we're going to go back down to the floor, see what else is happening. Thank you very much, Rob.
Cheers,
thank you for picking, once again, another weird book.
Anytime.
And the powers of the mighty James Tynion IV.
Yes.
Everybody's hot writer at the moment. Has Hollywood grabbed him?
I think it is grabbing him.
Right.
I feel like it is grabbing him at the moment. I feel like things get greenlit.
Some of these books have been optioned, presumably.
I think so, yeah.
Great. Thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Book Club. As ever, find all the links and the stuff we've been talking about at megacitybookclub.com. We're also on Blue Sky, like Rob. You can email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com, if you've got a book, create a story you want to come on and talk about. And until next time, from here in Bristol, it's goodbye from me and...
Goodbye from me. Right.